X-29, number 6A.
All these various stages of spiritual development were necessary to lead mankind to the sixth big period in Christian history, the time when it became more and more evident that the consciousness of these divine facts has the power to destroy all that is erroneous and to bring to light true creation, truth. This dawning of truth is still going on and will go on until it is universally accepted and scientifically demonstrated. This will usher in the millennium. Love. Can you see how the right idea of man is the Christ to the Adam consciousness, dissolving the Adam consciousness step by step until the right idea of man is brought out in its full glory? Third part. Up to now we have seen in the first part that before an idea, ignorance and belief have to yield. And in the second part, that a right idea thus lifts mankind or humankind out of the mortal dream into the living understanding of divine metaphysics. These changes we find are all due to the Christ impulsion forever going on. Through the first and second parts, however, we have witnessed only what this idea does, that it brings out the right idea of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. But neither of these two parts show us why the idea works. This is done in the third part, the platform, which explains the modus operandi, or the dynamics of divine metaphysics, or better expressed, analyzes the motivating power that lies behind the first and second parts. It informs us of the main phases of the dynamics of being. The great importance Mrs. Eddy attaches to this platform can be gauged in her introductory remark, which reads, "When the following platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated." Science and Health, 330, 8-10. First of all, let me just point out to you briefly the structure of the platform. As you probably know, it has 32 sections. Far from being disconnected, these 32 sections form an ordered, systematic and coherent whole. When we read them through, we cannot help noticing that the first 8 sections are written from the standpoint of the Word. Then there is a definite change in subject, and the second 8 sections take on the standpoint of the Christ. The third 8 sections are again different and depict the standpoint of Christianity, while the last 8 sections are written from the standpoint of Christian Science. So we find in the platform a well-balanced picture of the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and Christian Science. You may wonder why 8 sections are needed to describe one standpoint. The reason is that, since each idea reflects every other idea, here, too, each of the 4 standpoints not only states its own aspect, but also reflects the other 3. Each standpoint, therefore, has 4 aspects of 2 sections each. Again, you may wonder why there are 2 sections to each aspect. The answer is because Mrs. Eddy presents each aspect, first, more from a relative point of view, and second, more from an absolute point of view. You can see that the platform has an extremely symmetrical structure. This platform is so beautiful and intricate that if one studies and ponders it in detail, one is just overwhelmed by the richness and the exactness of the treasures it contains. No wonder Mrs. Eddy made it a bylaw that normal class students must not only be taught from recapitulation, but also from the platform. A thorough investigation of the platform is an almost unending task, and for this reason I cannot go into it too deeply here, but merely indicate the main lines. The first big standpoint is that of the word of life. The first 8 sections are pervaded by the tone that God is life, and that life is the eternal creator, the only creator. In its word aspect, we see that this God, life, defines himself through revelation and science, not through human conjectures, sections 1 and 2. In the aspect of the Christ, we find that God, this eternal creator, has expression. This expression is good and not evil, and is reflected in God's creation, sections 3 and 4. In the aspect of Christianity, we come to the next necessary statement, that God, who has a creation, includes that creation. God is here shown not only as all, which would be the word aspect, but as all in all, bringing out that God fills all space and is all-inclusive, sections 5 and 6. Finally, we come to the aspect of the word reflecting science, which deals with the relationship between God and his creation, between the all and the all. The oneness of God, the all in all, which is constituted of relationships, is explained here, sections 7 and 8. The next 8 sections illustrate the Christ as the revelation of the divine idea. The divine idea is now in the limelight. In the aspect of the word, we have the statement that this Christ or divine idea always reveals itself. It reveals itself to human consciousness and reveals all truth, sections 9 and 10. Viewed in its own aspect, the Christ in its office of translation is brought out. The Christ is shown as translated right down to the flesh, and also as expressing the divine nature, sections 11 and 12. The Christianity aspect stresses the universality and impersonality of this Christ translation. It shows that the Christ came and ever will come to every receptive thought, and to every plane of consciousness. The Christ illumines heaven and earth. It fills all space, sections 13 and 14. After we have been shown that the Christ reveals itself, word, translates itself, Christ, and so illumines every plane of thought, Christianity, finally, the science aspect explains that the Christ is an eternal scientific fact, which is always at work in the order of divine science, sections 15 and 16. Now come the third 8 sections, which are written from the standpoint of Christianity. The focus here is on the fact that creation is the infinite individualization of God. It all centers round the infinite, spiritual individuality of being. This is Christianity, where the idea is again in the forefront. The word aspect of Christianity presents the fact that spirit is only spiritually and never materially individualized, and that therefore the spiritual alone is substantial. spiritual being in the spiritual universe reflect the substance of spirit. Section 17 and 18. As this spiritual universe is not something static, but dynamic, the Christ aspect then shows that only the spiritual evolves and can bring reality, the likeness of spirit, to light. Can you feel that the dynamic sense of the Christ is introduced? Sections 19 and 20. In its own aspect, Christianity reflecting Christianity, this spiritual individualization is shown to be the infinite reflection of the infinite God, ranging from the infinitesimal to the infinite. Man is this infinite expression. The scope of man is infinite in individuality. There is here a tremendous sense of limitlessness, boundlessness, and infinitude. Sections 21 and 22. The aspect of science now explains that this spiritual universe is indissolubly related with God, that the infinitude of individual being is inseparable from God, is indivisible from God, that it is included in the parent mind. In other words, God and man coexist. Sections 23 and 24. This brings us to the last standpoint, the one of Christian Science. Science has to do with systematic knowledge and understanding. And here in these last eight sections, Mrs. Eddy explains that perfection is won through understanding. The word aspects gives us the way to this understanding. It shows that perfection is won by degrees, that man's perfection is in proportion to his purity of heart, that man is perfect in the measure he conforms to his principle. Sections 25 and 26. The Christ aspect indicates that pure thoughts, God's thoughts, are verities, and are therefore the Christ to any situation. An understanding of God demonstrates itself by subduing sin, sickness, and death, and by bringing to light perfect God and perfect man. Sections 27 and 28. The Christianity aspect deals with sin, the belief in a separation of God and man. An understanding of God, making God and man one, involves the final destruction of all sin. Sections 29 and 30. This leads, logically, to the last aspect of science, Christian Science reflecting science, which postulates a full understanding of the unreality of evil, as well as a full understanding of the oneness and onlyness of mind. Sections 31 and 32. Taking a broad view of the platform, we can clearly trace in it the four spiritual dimensions of the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. These four dimensions of spirit may remind you of Mrs. Eddy's statement that Christian Science is the infinite calculus defining the line, plane, space, and fourth dimension of spirit. Miscellaneous Writings 22:11-12. So the platform presents the divine infinite calculus, an up-to-date exemplification of the holy city. The four modes of divine thought and underlying scientific demonstration are constituted of the Word of God, the only Creator, the divine life revealing itself eternally, of the Christ, the divine idea manifesting and translating itself to every plane of thought, of Christianity presenting itself as the infinite reflection of infinite individualized being held in the infinitude of God, and of Christian Science, the understanding of the Word, Christ, and Christianity, leading to perfection. The platform really gives us a statement of the self-operative nature of the divine infinite calculus. As mentioned earlier, it explains the dynamics of being, the eternal operative power, which lies behind the first and second parts of this chapter. Seeing how the divine idea operates as the fourfold calculus of the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science, we find the explanation why ignorance has to yield before understanding, why the Adam-man has to yield before the right idea of man. Now, since the right idea of God, the right idea of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love dispel any belief of ignorance, any invisible or visible error, there is no reason why we should not experience here and now health, happiness, and holiness in every phase of life. In fact, the science of being solves the problems of existence. This is also Mrs. Eddy's promise in the last paragraph of the chapter, where she writes, "One infinite God, good, unifies men and nations, constitutes the brotherhood of man, ends wars, fulfills the scripture, love thy neighbor as thyself, annihilates pagan and Christian idolatry. Whatever is wrong in social, civil, criminal, political, and religious codes, equalizes the sexes, annuls the curse on man, and leaves nothing that can sin, suffer, be punished, or destroyed." Science and Health, 340, 23-29. As this is true, why has this promise not been fulfilled? What stands in its way? What stays or objects to its fulfillment? The answer to this is that mortal, human mentality objects to a complete acceptance of this science of being. The main objections put forward are presented in the next chapter, Some Objections Answered. Some Objections Answered. Having considered the science of being, which shows that an idea is always at work and has always been at work throughout human history, the main argument which is now raised is that while this is very wonderful, it is nothing more than theory and not practical. This is precisely the point Mrs. Eddy takes up at the start of her chapter, Some Objections Answered. The opening sentence reads, "The strictures on this volume would condemn to oblivion the truth which is raising up thousands from helplessness to strength and elevating them from a theoretical to a practical Christianity." Science and Health, 341, 1-4. To elevate a theoretical Christianity to a practical Christianity is the main theme of this chapter. In it, we shall find the main arguments against or objections to a living, practical Christianity, a Christianity that heals sin and sickness. Who raises these objections? To whom is this chapter addressed? In earlier editions of Science and Health, this chapter was entitled Reply to a Clergyman, and was later revised to Reply to a Critic. But finally, Mrs. Eddy impersonalized this altogether for she could see that she had not only to deal with the arguments of individual opponents, but with the objections in the mentality of every student. Hence, the contents of this chapter are not meant so much for opponents of Christian Science, but apply more specifically to each one of us, especially when the proof of what we have learned is demanded. This also brings me to another characteristic of this chapter, which is closely connected with the theme of elevating a theoretical Christianity to a practical Christianity, namely, the great necessity for statement to be followed by proof, and for proof to be explained through statement. The underlying verity is that statement and proof are one, that they cannot be divorced, that there is no division. Any statement that cannot be proved has no right to the name of science, and any proof that cannot be interpreted by scientific statement has no right to the name of science either. Proof by itself has no far-reaching effect unless a scientific explanation can be given for it. As I have already mentioned, I think this was the remarkable step Mrs. Eddy took. In 1866, she had her healing, her proof, and from that moment on, she strove to find a proper explanation or statement for it. That which tries to separate statement from proof and proof from statement is the great objection, and the subjects of this chapter deal with the main arguments through which it tries to manifest itself. There are many references in the chapter indicating that statement must be followed by proof, that words must be followed by facts. For instance, Mrs. Eddy says here that mere opinions are valueless, that proof is essential, that words find their immortality in deeds, and that we are inconsistent if our words are not followed by deeds. On the other hand, there are many references centering round the necessity that proof must be followed by statement. Mrs. Eddy says, when referring to Jesus, that his words were the offspring of his deeds, and also that our words should express our deeds. Statement and proof cannot be separated. Theory and practice are one. Science includes statement and proof. Science and being is one. Scientific knowledge and practical being go hand in hand. You cannot divide the science of being into two, into science and being. This chapter, Some Objections Answered, shows science and being to be one integral whole. It is the chapter in which we find the statement that demonstration and spiritual understanding are God's immortal keynotes. Science and Health, 355, 27-29. We have just emerged from Science of Being, which ended with a big promise of the practical demonstrations of the unity of being, where one infinite God good unifies men and nations, and so on. Now, whatever would disintegrate and split up this unity of being are objections which must be dealt with in our mentality. What is the unity of being? It is the universality of all ideas, their infinite relationship and co-relationship, held in one infinite coherency. It consists of the relationship of ideas as the natural outcome from the indestructible relationship of principle and idea. All these ideas in their relationship to one another fill all space and form one web of consistency. An idea can never be isolated. If isolated from its principle, it loses its nature as idea. As an idea is always clothed by God, it is always equipped with God's infinite ideas. It is always related to every other idea of God. For instance, An idea of mind is not only related to all the other ideas of mind, but also to all ideas of spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. This means that every idea forms a specific combination of ideas, for it reflects every other idea of God in a specific way. An idea or a quality of God never stands or works alone. It is always invested with and supported by all the other ideas or qualities of God. It is not surprising, therefore, that consistency and coherency are the key terms of this chapter. Consistency, according to Webster, means coherence, union, hence, that which stands together as a united whole. Condition of standing or adhering together or being fixed in union. This definition confirms what I have just said, that an idea is always united with all other ideas, with the whole, thus forming one infinite, coherent union. Webster continues to define consistency as a degree of resistance to separation of constituent particles. A consistent system of ideas resists the separation or disintegration into isolated ideas. Another definition from Webster reads, agreement or harmony of parts, of traits, or of different things. All these definitions, when translated into metaphysical use, bring out the fact that in the consistency of spiritual being, all ideas blend with one another and work together as one harmonious, coherent whole. Along with consistency goes the term coherency, which Webster defines as connection or congruity arising from some common principle or relationship. This is really a wonderful definition. For, applied to metaphysics, it hints at the fact that an idea in its reflection of all other ideas is qualitatively congruent with the divine principle. And being congruent with the divine principle, it cannot but be coherent with the infinitude of ideas. This coherent whole must be understood as one whole in order to be demonstrable. And that which in our mentality tries to disintegrate this whole is what prevents demonstration. We have to see an idea in its full reflection, or we take away something from its wholeness, and it cannot then be understood to be a complete whole. As long as we do not attribute to an idea all other qualities of God, we have not grasped this idea in its fullness, and this inconsistency prevents demonstration. Until all objections to the entirety of being are answered in our mentality, we cannot reap the fruit of demonstration. Whenever we detach something from the wholeness of being, we are inconsistent in theory and practice. This inconsistency of reasoning is just what Mrs. Eddy refers to in her first paragraph, where she deals with the strictures on her textbook. She says, these criticisms are generally based on detached sentences or clauses separated from their context. Science and Health 341, 4-6. Can you appreciate the great necessity of ultimately seeing the textbook as one story, as a whole, and not only as a reference book in which one studies isolated sentences or paragraphs? The lack of scientific demonstration is due to the failure to grasp the textbook as one coherent statement. I can only say that those who have begun to apprehend the textbook story as one whole have experienced a decided improvement in their practice. What is true of the textbook is also true of the Bible, and Mrs. Eddy continues, "Even the scriptures, which grow in beauty and consistency from one grand root, appear contradictory when subjected to such usage." Science and Health, 341, 6-8. Through her explanation of the spiritual import of the 7 days of creation, Mrs. Eddy has elucidated to our age the one grand root from which grows in beauty and consistency the whole Bible story. Recognition then goes to John W. Dorley for having expounded on the basis of that root the whole Bible story in its consistency.